Hello, and welcome to More Than a Movie, a brand new show about films and filmmaking here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with a new guest I'll be welcoming onto the show each week, we'll take a journey into the magical world of movies. Yes, it's the cold season here in Malta, and my sole aim is to bring some of cinema's most striking films into your living rooms on the chilly, dark winter nights that lay ahead. Each week, I'll focus the lens on a unique movie subgenre, and today it's science fiction adventure that's worlds away. A little later on, I'll be training the spotlight on a select few films in this subgenre that I hope will transport our imaginations into another dimension. A local guest will also join me very shortly to explain why they love film so much, and to talk a little about their own film-related work here in Malta. But first, movies have, of course, become one of the pervasive mass entertainment art forms of our time. Great movies break through our conscious defences, moving us to tears of joy and sadness. I mean, any time I'm watching a film and I move to tears, I know I must be watching something special. Do you, maybe, ever feel that way too? That's the kind of powerful viewing experience this show is all about. Because the best movies combine emotional storytelling with powerful music, visuals, color palettes, and mood. But how does this magic actually happen? Exploring that question will be our sacred quest here on More Than a Movie. Films speak to our subconscious. This is an intensely psychological medium. And on the show, we'll be aiming for a little more depth than simply deciding whether a film is great or whether it sucked. Why does the movie story work? What's the narrative structure and the chronology in the screenplay? Are typical genre movie conventions and character tropes being adhered to? Or rather, is the director breaking them, perhaps even on purpose? What are the film's influences? Has it, in turn, influenced other films that came after it? And how does each movie fit in with the other work of the director and actors involved? These are the kinds of ideas we'll be exploring together. Of course, film production globally has been massively impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic that began in 2020, along with so many other sectors of the arts world. This means we don't have a big choice of new movies to watch in the cinemas here in Malta right now. I mean, I've literally seen just two movies in the cinema here since March. Slim pickings indeed, eh? And so, of course, streaming comes to the rescue. We can now enjoy countless new movies from the comfort of our own sofas. And that, preferably, of course, with a massive bowl of popcorn in our laps. But the big question is, do you prefer salted or sweet? But I digress. The point is, what would us film freaks have done without modern computer technology in the last year or so, I ask you? But without further ado, it's now time to meet our guest for this week. Michael Kissown has a film career spanning more than 40 years. It began with work on Robert Altman's Disney-produced Popeye, filmed here in Malta, of course. Michael has worked as an assistant director and producer in various exotic locales around the world. He's trained both in Los Angeles and in Berlin, and in 2013, he relocated back here to Malta, producing his first feature here in 2017. Hello, Michael, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andrew. Hi.
Great to have you here. So, Michael, tell me, do you remember now the moment when your love for film was born?
When I got my first paycheck.
When you...
joking apart. Okay. I think it was as soon as I started working on Popeye.
It was Popeye, though.
It was Popeye. There was definitely no doubt about that.
Right.
There were over 200 carpenters, 80 cast.
Right.
It was just a massive production, yes.
And what was your role on the Popeye?
I was a production assistant.
Okay. And what does that involve, exactly?
Well, in those days, basically, you were assisting the production, whatever you need. An old word is a gopher. Go for this, go for that.
Right.
But eventually, I got on very well with the Altman team, and they asked me to copy their schedule.
Okay.
And in those days, we didn't have computers, of course. I believe we had the first photocopier on the island.
Right.
And so I had to copy their schedule, which had to be done by a special pen. Wow. Writing. And you weren't allowed to have a mistake in it.
Right.
So I had to copy it twice.
Gosh.
Which is it's something I still do today. I still make schedules.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Now, do you remember, Michael, the first film you ever saw in the movie theater?
Yes, El Cid.
El Cid.
El Cid, yes.
And what was that? What was the picture?
That was a major movie in those days. It was about... I don't really remember the story very much.
A Roman...
It was about the Spanish conquest.
Aha.
Medieval conquest.
Okay.
And it was... I still have this image still very clear in my head of these horses riding across the beach.
Right.
And that really, it impressed me forever. Yeah.
Okay.
But funny enough, when I was a four-year-old, I was brought up in Africa, and my parents were working in Africa. And I woke up, and apparently my mother says that one of the first sentences I said was, "I saw a fine film last night."
Oh, right.
I must have dreamt or something, yeah.
Your first words, basically, were already cinematic. That's awesome. Okay. And am I right in saying that you've produced some films here in Malta since you came back?
Yes, that's right. In 2017, we produced an amazing film called Habbilni Hanirbah, which was directed by Mario Philip Atsopardi. Mm-hmm. And it's a story about four girls who start winding each other up and make a bet.
Okay.
And who, if they all could get pregnant from one guy... And they were being driven by social media. So it had a very educational tone to it.
Very cool.
And it was filmed completely in Maltese by a predominantly Maltese crew.
That's great. That's great.
Gosh. And since then, now I've just finished producing Spetu Bonnici.
Right.
Which is also completely in Maltese. And we're dedicating ourselves to... developing Maltese language cinema.
Great.
And TV shows, but not on a normal let's come and go level, hopefully introducing my 40 years of international experience, how to plan and produce here on the island.
That's awesome. And can you talk a bit about how you brought your team together for those productions?
Well, yes, it's a selection process. Mm-hmm. One of the difficult things here in Malta is to find good sound people and camera people. Invariably, people who own a camera call themselves cinematographers, but they may not really be cinematographers. They have a very good camera, but it doesn't mean they're the photographers.
Right.
So we had a difficult process of finding the right cameraman. And in the case of Habbilni Hanirbah, we brought somebody from the UK.
Okay.
Spetu Bonnici, a friend of mine who's half Maltese and half American, was here on holiday, and he decided to stay and do it.
Right.
And the rest of the crew was a question of phoning up people, seeing availabilities and comparing their CVs.
And do you find yourself that you tend to reuse people from one production to the next?
Absolutely. If a person's proved to be correct and done his job on one of my jobs, then yes, he stays with me.
Right, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, in terms of your own particular role on these various productions, you seem to have run the gamut between production roles through to doing assistant directing itself.
Yeah.
And do you have a preference? Like, is there a role that you find yourself falling into more naturally, that you enjoy more? Or?
It's funny enough, the producing role is something that, I mean, everybody when they start in the film business wants to be a director.
Right,
it's standard, everyone, I'm going to direct. And I had that feeling at some time, but I was making more money as an assistant director than I was on hoping to be a director.
Right.
I love assistant directing. It's a very specific job when it's done correctly. You plan, you contemplate what is in the story. Of course, you work with your director, and then you manage the set. So you have time limits. It's a factory.
Right, it's You've like got a conveyor belt of process.
It is a conveyor belt, but you have to allow for art as well.
Of course.
You know, you're working with humans, and they have their necessities. Producing is actually a marriage of both, because you're controlling the budget and the possibility of how to spend that money, as versus the quality you want to get out of it.
Right.
Right. Sometimes it's better to spend $10 more or 10 euros more and get the right person than to save 10 euros and end up having to spend 100.
I can imagine, So there's a lot of analysis and sort of decision-making.
And luck.
And luck. Right. Okay, so let me ask you this then, Michael. If you had the funds to make a feature, any feature you wanted, what kind of a movie would it be? Do you have a log line? Do you have a pitch for us? What sort of a film would you make if you could make anything in the world?
Yes, I have been working for many, many years on The Life and Works of Caravaggio.
Okay.
And in 2003, we had a pitch with an Italian-German co-production to do this. And unfortunately, at that time, this happens in the movies, somebody else produced a TV show.
Uh-huh.
So the element kind of fell out.
Right.
Now, we've had many offers to do it, but on a lower budget, and I'm not interested. This is it has to be on a much higher budget.
I see.
So that would be, yes, the film of films that I'd like to make.
Fair enough. Very interesting. The artist Caravaggio. Tell me, Michael, how do you feel about the film industry here in Malta at the moment?
Okay, this is a very interesting question, the film industry. You have to see, the film industry is a broad term. They call it the film industry. The film industry is divided into two parts here in Malta. You have the film servicing industry, which is mainly coordinated by the Malta Film Commission and the Malta Film Facilities up in Kalkara. That's a servicing side of the business. That is, a film producer comes to Malta, he needs a location, they organize the permits, they organize the crew. That's a servicing industry. Then there is the Malta indigenous film industry.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly, of course, like the rest of Europe, we survive off TV.
Yes.
We have to. That's where the money is. And, of course, the Arts Council is very, very aware of the necessity of supporting this idea.
Right.
And that is actually the Malta film industry.
Fair enough. That's very interesting. So it's kind of falling into two main
tranches. Yes, the servicing, you know, get me a piece of wood, get me a driver, get me this. That's the servicing side of the industry.
Yes.
And then there's, you know, the side that where we Maltese make the decisions.
Which, of course, is the side we're hoping will
grow. Yes, we can. We can do it. We're all very clever. I mean, I've met so many talented people in Malta.
Yes.
I've lived for a good part of 30 years abroad. I've traveled the world making movies. And I come across people here in Malta who are just as clever as the guy I was working in New Zealand or the guy I was working in Canada with. They're just as clever. Right. Our resources are limited here.
Yes, but lots of talent.
Lots of talent. Wonderful talent here.
That's great to hear. Good, good. Fantastic. So, Michael, our genre this week is science fiction adventure that's worlds away. And I wonder, do you have a movie with that theme, that subgenre, that you're particularly fond of?
Yes, I have several of them. Well, I'm a Star Wars man.
Right, of course.
Episode 1, 2, and 3,
okay.
The first ones.
The originals.
The originals. I'm an Indiana Jones fan.
Okay.
Simply because of my love for archaeology.
Right.
And ancient history. And, of course, I think the ultimate, penultimate movie, I think, is Avatar.
Avatar.
Avatar, James Cameron Avatar.
The James Cameron extravaganza.
A wonderful movie, from many aspects. The lesson in it about how we treat nature. Not because we can't see it, it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
I love the three-dimensional aspect
yes.
of it, where you're not only looking on one plane, but then there's the dives that those dragons do, which takes you into another realm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great. Let's have a quick listen to Avatar.
The concept is to drive these remotely controlled bodies called avatars. They're grown from human DNA mixed with DNA of the natives.
Marine in an avatar body. That's a potent mix.
Okay, great. Michael, so is there somewhere people can go online if they'd like to learn a little bit more about your film work here in Malta?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I have a website. It's a very simple website which basically lists the amount of films that I have done. It's an elementary CV. It's
okay.
Not a punchy sort of website, you know, with animation and things like that. I've worked for about 18 years in the German film industry.
Right.
Mainly in the last six working overseas in Germany, so...
Okay. And what's the website?
Oh, it's www.kisson.com.
Okay, www.kisson.com. Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Michael, and we hope to be seeing more and more of your work on the TV and hopefully in the cinemas very soon.
Thank you, Andrew.
And so, before we discuss our main sci-fi adventure films this week, what about famous related movies that were shot here in Malta over the years? Well, many people will already know that Jurassic World Dominion, that's the sixth installment in the Jurassic Park franchise, was shooting here in Malta in late 2020. And there are other well-known sci-fi movies, of course, World War Z and Assassin's Creed, for example, both partially shot here on the islands. But there was also 2012's Kon-Tiki, an intriguing adventure story about a group of intrepid Norwegians who set out to cross the entire Pacific Ocean on nothing but a balsa wood raft. The launch scene of that film was shot on the Valletta harbourfront, which was doubling up for a Peruvian port in the movie. And still on the adventure side, veering more into fantasy, if we go all the way back to the 1970s, we have Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, and The Golden Voyage of Sinbad, both partially filmed here. These two films depict the swashbuckling seafaring adventures of Sinbad the Sailor, a fictional mariner who's actually of Middle Eastern origin. He goes on countless fantasy voyages, encountering mythical creatures and supernatural phenomena. Well, these films are undoubtedly looking really dated by today's standards, but they feature the stop-motion animation work of Ray Harryhausen, who was an absolute pioneer of film special effects work back in his day. And if we move a little forward to 1981, we have the wonderful fantasy adventure film Clash of the Titans. This is the mythical story of Perseus, a young warrior who battles classic monsters from Greek mythology such as the Gorgon Medusa and a huge sea monster known as the Kraken. Now again, Harryhausen is behind the superb stop-motion creature effects here, and it's amazing how good this film still looks, almost 40 years after it was released. Of course, the climax of that movie, featuring that hulking Kraken monster, was famously shot at the Azure Window at Dwera on the island of Gozo. Yes, that same geological outcropping that sadly fell into the seas of Gozo during a storm back in March of 2017. And well, we'll move beyond films shot in Malta now and discuss a select few sci-fi adventure movies that are truly out of this world.
Circuit board or something. I can take a look at it tomorrow, okay?
And our first film is Explorers, from way back in 1985. And this is from the wonderful independent director Joe Dante. Now, if you're not familiar with his name, in 1984, the year before Explorers was released, Dante directed Gremlins, widely regarded as one of the great fantasy horror films. Now, Joe Dante is a very interesting chap, because many of his films skirt the boundary between family movies and horror, and that's certainly the case with Gremlins. More recently, though, Dante also directed the largely unknown 2009 movie The Hole, which is about as disturbing of a kid's movie as I've seen. Definitely recommended, but make sure you have a pillow to hide behind. Back to Explorers, though. Here, Dante stays well away from horror and transports us firmly into fantasy sci-fi land. It's a beautiful tale of three young boys, all marginalized in their school environments, who, through the power of dreams, gain the blueprint to building a fascinating device that promises to lead them on an adventure into outer space.
We had something to sit in. All three of us could fly around in this.
Great idea.
That's right. If, when you were a kid, or even, perhaps as an adult now, you ever daydreamed about journeying in a spaceship into the outer realms of space, I think you'll find much to love in this story. The film features a charming performance from Ethan Hawke, very well known as an adult actor today, of course, and he was just 15 years old at the time of filming. Of course, there's also a suitably geeky turn from the much-loved actor River Phoenix. Now, incidentally, Explorers was the feature film debut for both of these young actors at the time. Of course, River's younger brother Joaquin has gone on to do important film work in recent years, but River Phoenix was considered a great talent until his untimely death back in Los Angeles in 1993. He had roles in many other important films of his day, including the famous Stephen King adaptation Stand By Me. Back to Explorers, though, and the movie is very much a love letter to science fiction films of old.
Hurry up! Jump in!
There was a girl with them. If I could find them.
Come on, jump in, will ya?
Kind of lost. You look kind of lost yourself.
Explorers is also complemented by a slew of quality supporting roles, including a young and barely recognizable James Cromwell as the delightfully batty mad scientist father of Wolfgang, the character played by River Phoenix. The influence of Explorers, in particular the buddy movie dynamics between the group of young kids, can be seen in many more recent productions. Take a look, for example, at Andy Muschietti's 2017 adaptation of the creepy clown horror story It, once again based on a book by Stephen King, and you'll see a lot of the same magic happening between the kids. Here's Explorers again.
Since the Thunder Road's inside the field now, I'm going to plot our movement relative to an outside stationary point, which is the creek. There we are.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Harness drink.
Oh, come on, check. Let's go.
Wait.
Supplies. We need supplies.
Look,
before we go, we
supplies.
Need
supplies. Check.
Are you
supplies.
Nuts?
Unfortunately, back in 1985, Explorers was released in theatres literally the weekend after Back to the Future hit the silver screens, and that pretty much killed Explorers' chances of ever being a box office hit. But the movie has gained a cult following over the years, and thank goodness for that, says me. There's also a wonderful musical score by Jerry Goldsmith.
We have our own spaceship.
So if there's a little bit of the geeky dreamer in any one of you listening, I highly recommend you check this out. And your kids are going to love it. For anyone who wants to learn a little more about Joe Dante himself, he co-hosts a great film podcast online. It's called The Movies That Made Me, very easy to find with a quick web search. In one particular episode, he does an extended interview with William Friedkin, whose name you might recognize. He directed the classic demonic possession horror film The Exorcist. It's a really fascinating conversation, absolutely packed with incredible insight into the filmmaking process, and that from two of Hollywood's most experienced filmmakers, highly recommended to all you genre film geeks out there. Well, on to the second movie in our science fiction episode, and it's Contact, starring Jodie Foster! Robert Zemeckis directed this film back in 1997, and you may recognize the director's name. He's been behind countless great Hollywood films, including Forrest Gump, Romancing the Stone, and, of course, Back to the Future. I mean, we can't have a sci-fi episode that doesn't mention that film. Probably one of my favorite movies ever. But Back to the Future is so famous, and we're trying to uncover work that maybe is a little less known here, too. So back to Contact. This features a superb performance by Jodie Foster as Dr. Ellie Arroway, a determined and headstrong astrophysicist. The scientist's fundamental tenets and beliefs are called into question when she discovers a strange radio signal from outer space that seems to be a transmission from an advanced alien species.
Detection of an unidentified radio source from deep space can neither be confirmed nor denied.
Whatever it is, it ain't local.
When Dr. Arroway and her team tell the world about first contact, the chain of global events rapidly spins out of control.
Having sent this announcement all over the world may well constitute a breach of national security.
Boy, this isn't a person-to-person call. This may be an announcement to get our attention.
The president's called an emergency meeting.
So overall, Contact is less of an adventure movie, really, and more of a science fiction drama. And I'd argue that Contact is really one of the great modern movies examining the tricky dichotomy between religious faith and science-based reasoning. Part sci-fi, part philosophical drama, this superbly directed feature also features a tender and sincere performance from Foster's co-star, Matthew McConaughey, here not even 30 years old. Now, McConaughey has copped quite a bit of flack for some of his more light-hearted film roles over the years, and that was before he had something of a renaissance as a more serious character actor over the last 10 years or so.
By doing this, you're willing to risk your life, you're willing to give your life and die for this. Why?
But in Contact, we can see what an accomplished and mature performer he already was back in 1997. He takes on the role of Father Palmer Joss, a theologian who provides the thematic counterpoint for Jodie Foster's rather cold, logical scientist. He also turns out to be her boyfriend. Funny how that happens, eh? Contact was adapted from a book penned by the great Carl Sagan, and it's really a very serious philosophical meditation on faith and science, coupled with a moving backstory about childhood loss and grief. Now, let's not forget that Contact is, at heart, a Hollywood movie made in the 1990s, so there are some Tinseltown flourishes that may grate a little with some viewers.
I'm going to recommend to the President that we militarize this project immediately.
There's no reason to believe that their intentions are hostile.
There's no proof of that.
But really, this is just great armchair theatre all round, and it's amazing how well the scientific and technical aspects of the film have aged. For anyone interested in the modern-day nexus between faith and science, I highly recommend this moving and sophisticated piece of sci-fi cinema. Now, Jodie Foster, really, in my view, is one of the great actresses of the modern era. Any of our younger listeners, if you haven't seen a lot of her movies, you really ought to look them up. She's made plenty of lesser-known films that are also worth a look. The Brave One, Flight Plan, and even Nell all spring to mind as being well worth a gander. And it's really fascinating, actually. I saw Contact for the first time, way back when I was in my 20s, and back then I remember thinking it was a decent enough movie about alien contact. Well, I'm in my mid-40s now, there's a few more miles on the clock, and I revisited this film again recently, and I must say, it took on a whole new significance this time round. Watching it was a far more poignant and reflective experience. Perhaps I'm not alone on that. Maybe some of you listeners out there may have also found that your feelings about a particular movie change over the course of your lives. Now then, on to our final movie for the day, and we're moving on to a much more modern film here. We're also leaving Hollywood to travel all the way over to Russia for the movie August 8th, directed by Dzanik Faiziev in 2012. A single mother sends her young son for a vacation with the boy's father, who lives in a politically unstable region of Georgia all the way over in Eurasia. But when an intense war suddenly breaks out there without warning, and she loses contact with her husband, she has no choice but to set out on a frantic mission to rescue her son at all costs. Part science fiction, part fantasy, part all-out action. August 8th caused a little bit of a stir upon release, depicting as it does a conflict in South Ossetia, which is a disputed region in South Caucasia. And some have called into question the film's portrayals of the specifics of that conflict. But let's leave geopolitics and land disputes to one side. The movie is a strange hybrid of filmmaking styles, but a rather intriguing one at that. And it's interesting to note that Russia, whilst having quite a healthy film industry of its own, isn't in the least bit shy about borrowing the best elements of more established Hollywood movies in this case. I mean, in August 8th, we see various fantasy special effects scenes that heavily borrow from Michael Bay's Transformers franchise, and even a scene paying very specific homage to an infamous moment in the classic 80s rom-com When Harry Met Sally. And I'll leave it for you as viewer to discover that little treat for yourself. It's really quite well done, I must admit. Now, another very recent example of Russian cinema borrowing from Hollywood is Igor Abramenko's 2020 horror sci-fi drama Sputnik. This is a well-acted piece of genre filmmaking in its own right. Good psychological sci-fi. But Sputnik, too, bears the visual hallmarks of many great Hollywood predecessors, including, of course, such classics as the Alien movie franchise. Anyway, back to August 8th, and Hollywood moments aside, there's a considerable array of filmmaking talent on display here. We go on a harrowing journey with our charming protagonist, a young mother who eventually teams up with a reluctant but sincere military leader who vows to help her locate her little boy. There's solid location photography and some very intense and vividly shot war scenes later in the movie. I mean, okay, it's not quite Saving Private Ryan, but kudos to the team for a very convincing production. And despite the sci-fi fantasy backdrop, this actually turns out to be a rather moving story about a young mother's desperate, obstacle-filled journey. It's a challenging, physical role that's very ably performed by Russian actress Svetlana Ivanova. So if you're curious to sample some science fiction from another part of the world, you could do much worse than August 8th. Recommended. So, what did you think of the movie selection in our show? Did we make you think of other worthy sci-fi adventures? Did the recommendations today convince you to watch one of the films that's been mentioned? If so, we'd love to know what you thought of it. For all that, or any other feedback, suggestions, and questions, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This More Than a Movie episode, science fiction adventure that's worlds away, was written and presented by Andrew Bonello. And the sound engineer was Redent Abdillah. Our intro music was Creepy Comedy, and the outro is Inspiring Teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io, and the clips are licensed under creativecommons.org version 4. Thank you so much for listening, and I do hope you'll join us again next week on More Than a Movie, where we'll be exploring intense flicks pitting man against beast.